Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
Many of New York's cities begin their new fiscal year July 1st, and they're struggling to balance their budgets after the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic. Meanwhile, there's a growing movement in the state legislature to raise taxes on the wealthy to help balance the state's budget and to help cities out. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
Cities across the state are facing a severe budget crunch, much of it due to the 2.5-month shutdown of the economy and the corresponding loss of revenue. State Controller Tom DiNapoli found that sales tax revenue dropped by 32% in May. It declined 24% in April. Businesses were closed for weeks, and some were unable to pay their bills. That's likely to have an effect on property tax collections. Binghamton Mayor Rich David, who's vice president of the New York State Conference of Mayors, says cities had new costs when first responders worked longer hours as the virus peaked. He says now more police and public safety officers are working overtime during the largely peaceful protests continuing since the death of George Floyd. David says because of all of that, cities are facing a financial situation that he calls a nightmare scenario.
We are essential service providers. It's police, it's fire, it's public works, it's water and sewer. And so the shortfalls are so enormous that you're not simply going to be able to tax your way out or cut your way out or drain your reserves or hiring freezes, et cetera.
New York State is facing its own budget crisis with a $13 billion deficit due to the pandemic shutdown. Governor Andrew Cuomo has been pressing Congress to pass a relief package that includes money for state and local governments. He says without it, he'll have to slash state aid to localities by one-fifth sometime this summer.
You would be cutting schools 20%, local governments 20%, and hospitals 20%. And this is the worst time to do this.
Cuomo in the past has not been in favor of raising taxes. A growing number of state legislators favor increasing taxes on the wealthy, though, or on Wall Street transactions if federal aid does not come through. 100 senators and assembly members, all Democrats, whose party leads in both chambers, signed on to a letter that agrees in principle to raise taxes on the rich before making any budget cuts. Assemblywoman Yulene Niu is one of those lawmakers.
Are we going to keep on hurting people and be afraid of taxing the rich, that they might flee Manhattan or flee New York, you know? And I think that we need to make sure that the rich pay their fair share.
Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie says he's not ruling out raising taxes on the wealthy if it can help alleviate devastating cuts.
Everything's on the table because it's just unacceptable and unimaginable for us to do 20% cuts to the lifeblood of communities.
Mayor David says for now, cities are going to have to live with a lot of uncertainty. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, let's start with the primaries. Lots of drama, but little certainty, says the New York Times. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez easily won her race in New York. That's according to the Associated Press, but final results in most contests were not expected for days. From Politico this morning, the left is on the rise in New York City, and the reaction from you on these primaries so far?
David, I think that the one thing that is clear is that the young people in this country are having a say. And in a time of great uncertainty, our politics are moving left. Nevertheless, some of the great institutional people like Carolyn Maloney on the east side of Manhattan and others are in real trouble here. There does seem to be a sense that there is a natural moving from centrist, slightly left in the country. There are some predictable races, but on the other hand, we won't know an awful lot about these primary results until each of the votes is counted, and it's quite a morass. It looks like spaghetti to me.
But then there was this other district with Congressman Elliot Engel, the 16-term Democrat, and Jamal Bowman, who's put up quite a challenge and holds a lead so far. You spoke with the governor about this, who endorsed Engel, this fight between the left of the party and the centrists.
That's right, David. You know, the people who have always been comfortably in power no longer are. Everybody has to watch their backs. If you are a congressman or a senator, you better believe that insurgents have the power to oust you, and it is no longer your position by right. I spoke to Elliot Engel quite a while ago. I can tell you he put himself into some danger by not showing up the way that he ought to have. And that is going to be a lesson that is going to be very well learned by everybody else. Now, look, there are some wonderful congressmen who do show up and who are very smart. And I suspect they're not going to have the issue that a guy like Engel had, who didn't show up to his constituents' satisfaction. There's one other thing, David, and that is you have to believe that people in districts are going to elect somebody who looks and acts like them as opposed to like somebody else. At one point, Elliot Engel had a constituency that looked like him. Now, there is a big push on to make the congressperson from that district reflective of the constituency. That's what's happening, and that is what will always happen. It is what has always happened.
Well, we see with Governor Cuomo in the lead, New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut are imposing quarantines on visitors from states with COVID-19 outbreaks. Quite a contradistinction, in fact, when you look at New York and some of the other states that were more safely locked down compared with those that have not followed the rules.
David, this is a very scary situation. Everybody should be frightened. And frankly, I know an awful lot of people who are not being properly precautious with putting masks on and doing what they should be. Look, Cuomo led the way, you're right. Massachusetts is doing really well right now. New York is doing well. Nevertheless, people are being stupid. And you've got to wear the mask, and you've got to wear it all the time. And we all see people who don't do that. We go to the supermarkets, and it's not there. Look, the one way to prevent this, we know, is to wear the mask, is to socially distance. We've all heard it so many times, it's coming out of our ears. Nevertheless, it's true. And if it's a matter of life and death, anybody who doesn't listen is really making a big mistake. And I think all of us have to be very, very cautious about how we proceed right now. I know in my little town of Great Barrington, they're opening the wonderful railroad street. You can sit at tables, but if you're going to sit there, you should be sitting there with a mask because somebody's certainly going to pass you. So let's not get obnoxious about this. Let's start thinking the way we should. This is going to cause a lot of people to die. And what we're finding now is that while the demographic used to be older people, an awful lot of younger people who were being, frankly, obnoxious about the whole thing and not cautious are really putting themselves at great risk.
The states that have come together to put the quarantine out and the governor, you spoke with him this week after the announcement. These governors of these states that have acted with a certain amount of responsibility could have that all blow up in their faces.
Well, look, these governors have the responsibility of protecting their people. And they are saying, look, if you're coming from a state where the governor, Governor DeSantis, for example, in Florida, has acted with impunity and who has not done what he needed to do to protect his people, as Cuomo did in New York, then we're not going to let you in. It's hard to believe, and I said this to Cuomo, that with planes coming and going to Florida every day that you're going to be able to do that. But he is threatening massive fines, and he is saying to people, you have the responsibility of blowing the whistle on those people who are coming up here and not acting appropriately. So Cuomo is going to get high marks for what he's doing from the people here in this state I'm not so sure about from the other states. And also, David, one can turn around and say, when people like Rhode Island were saying, we don't want New Yorkers here, this shoe can fit on either foot, depending on what your perspective is at a particular moment.
You spoke with the state comptroller, Tom DiNapoli, this week.
I did. On your I love that
Connection
guy.
Program. Yeah. He and you have a wonderful conversation centered around the most important thing he has to deal with, obviously. How are we doing financially? And you asked him that question. He said doing okay with caveats for now. But when you look into the details, we have a $14 billion shortfall in New York. The comptroller says you really don't want to borrow. You don't want to cut. But there's no clear consensus on raising taxes. He says it's coming quick, the pain, and it'll probably be worse before it gets better. The aid to municipality payments, he's already done 20% reductions in, I believe, 12 cities across upstate, including Syracuse, where you're projecting forward to 2021 and already reducing the aid.
That's right. He doesn't have an enviable job when things get tough. Look, this governor is in a position where he is saying the only way out of this is for the feds to come up with the money. And he is not deviating from that position, and he's not moving from it. If he does, he blinks. And he doesn't want to blink. He wants to put the pressure where it should be on the federal government to save New York. He is doing that, and DiNapoli is right with him on that. If, in fact, Trump doesn't move, if he punishes New York, continues to punish New York, it's going to be a hell of a difficult situation. New York is going to have to decide, David, whether it wants to raise taxes in order to take care of the budget shortfall, or whether it will just somehow go into some kind of default. But I can tell you that $14 billion is a lot of money. And where the governor is going to come up with that, if the feds don't come, is going to be a big question. We know that, as you say, the municipalities are going to take it in their neck. So are the school districts. Everybody passed the school budget this year. That doesn't mean they're going to get the money from the state that they're anticipating.
You also spoke with the comptroller about the issue of the day, and that's what to do about police reform. You asked him about the phrase defunding the police. He said, you know, we need the police, but there needs to be a dialogue. And one of the interesting things he said was he had done a report, not recently, but a while back, on investing in at-risk youth programs and how he showed in the report, you know, if you invest money into, for example, at-risk youth, you have less need for incarceration by police later on.
Well, that's right. We know it. We know that if you put the money where it should go, whether it's PAL groups or whether it's more social workers to intervene in difficult homes, that there'll be a payout for it. The question is it too amorphous for so many people? In the past, everybody said, okay, give the police more money. Now it turns out that was the wrong way to go. So he is saying it's still the way it was. If you invest the money up front, you're going to really get results.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The New York State Board of Regents and State Education Department are holding meetings across the state to gather input on how to reopen and meet the needs of students in the fall. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard with more.
Board of Regents Chancellor Betty Rosa opened Wednesday's regional discussion by saying how the pandemic and recent events have exposed the inequities in New York's education system.
This systemic injustice only strengthens our resolve to ensure educational equity for all students. I'm urging you to keep the issue of equity at the forefront of your thinking today.
The Reopening Schools Task Force meeting Wednesday was held for counties in the Southern Tier, Central New York, and Mohawk Valley regions. Stakeholders include parents, school personnel, including teachers and administrators, school board members, and others. Stakeholders are being asked to share what they've experienced during the pandemic shutdowns and how can the state improve and take proper precautions in the fall. Regents Board Vice Chancellor Andrew Brown told participants that their input would be gathered for guidelines, not mandates.
We understand that every school and every district is unique. We want to allow for flexibility and leeway.
Prior to a set of breakout sessions, the regional meeting included presentations by experts on infectious disease and so-called social and emotional learning. Breakout sessions focused on categories like teaching and learning, HR and staffing, transportation, special education, and English language learners. Afterwards, state education officials presented what they learned. State Education Department Director of Curriculum and Instruction, Mary Beth Casey, reported back that stakeholders want to think beyond merely instruction as part of reopening.
And something a student brought up that I thought was very helpful is that if it is necessary to move to remote instruction, we need to think more about what our students are missing extracurricularly as well as academically, right? So attending to those social emotional needs. So much was canceled at the end of this year.
State Education Department Associate Commissioner for the Office of Bilingual Education and World Languages, Elisa Alvarez, said stakeholders want more action to reach vulnerable populations.
Inequities and access and connectivity of our students, our most vulnerable, need to be responded to.
Casey, too, heard students with disabilities and English language learners often struggled with online instruction.
But some of the teachers in the rooms I was in brought up, and administrators, not just those populations, some populations of students, surprisingly, some of your really high performers did not take as well to an online and remote type of instruction as one would have thought they would.
Alvarez said the most critical item mentioned was the desire for changing how the school year is structured, including the minimum number of school days.
They were requesting that the Board of Regents think about flexibility and guidance around the 180 days.
The next regional task force meeting will be held for the Capital Region, Mid-Hudson Valley, and North Country regions on June 22nd. The fourth and final meeting will be held on June 24th for the New York City and Long Island regions. The Board of Regents and State Education Department then plan on developing guidelines with a presentation on the proposed changes set for the July 13th Board of Regents meeting.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
Consumer advocates and environmentalists are applauding a bill New York Governor Andrew Cuomo recently signed that prevents utility shutoffs during the COVID-19 pandemic. And in other cases, the Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn reports.
The bill Governor Cuomo signed June 17th prevents utility companies from shutting off service during the pandemic and other states of emergency. Richard Berkeley is executive director of the Public Utility Law Project.
So we were tremendously heartened by the governor's action in signing the bill into law. And we applaud him for being the first governor in the United States to sign into law a bill like this. While the Puerto Rico and the District of Columbia took similar action, they're not states, and they both had special circumstances pushing them in this direction. But for the first state and a major state like New York to do this, it was a great thing to see.
The bill was sponsored by Brooklyn Democrats Walter Mosley in the Assembly and Kevin Parker in the Senate. Eric Weltman is senior organizer with Food and Water Action.
Food and Water Action believes that water is a human right. It's a public health necessity, particularly in a crisis like this. And while we appreciate, Governor Cuomo signing this bill into law and guaranteeing people, the right to water, access to water during this public health crisis, Food and Water Action and our allies are going to continue to ensure that beyond this crisis that all New Yorkers have access to safe, affordable public drinking water.
Weltman says the measure requires restoration of service to those who lost it during the crisis, bans shutoffs for 180 days after the end of the state of emergency, prohibits late fees and penalties, and guarantees access to extended or deferred repayment plans. He would like to see such legislation applied to water all the time.
I mean, I live in New York City where people, don't get their water shut off for any reason. And it's a real blessing. And that's the kind of policy that we would love to see, implemented statewide.
He says that while New York is moving to provide protections, other state and local moratoriums on water shutoffs are expiring, putting millions of people at risk of losing their water service and leading advocates to call for Congress to pass a national moratorium on utility shutoffs. The Public Utility Law Project's Berkeley says more needs to be done to protect New York's most vulnerable residents.
The water industry in New York is the only public utility industry, vital public utility, that doesn't have some kind of an affordability program statewide or even at all the individual entities of all of the utilities. So we're very interested in, you know, continuing to work on affordability issues for all the public utilities, the public authorities, and the municipal water systems that serve New Yorkers in the state. Our water is expensive enough that it causes problems for people who are living on the border. And now that, you know, 1 to 1.5 million households have become what we call newly low income, it's become a bigger problem than it was even before COVID.
The Public Utility Law Project joined with AARP in praising the coronavirus utility shutoff moratorium bill.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. The New York State Department of Environmental Conservation has released an interim report with recommendations to deal with overuse of the High Peaks region of the Adirondacks. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley with more.
The report from the High Peaks Strategic Planning Advisory Group offers steps to manage recreational use of the Adirondack Wilderness. There are some new recommendations, while others enhance ongoing efforts. Among the immediate actions the report recommends are strictly enforcing parking, especially along the popular Route 73 corridor, use of shuttles and e-shuttles, implementation of leave-no-trace measures in the High Peaks region, and establishing a pilot program to limit use. The town of Keene is often described as an entry to the High Peaks. Supervisor Joe Pete Wilson, a member of the advisory group, says the DEC has been responsive in implementing some of the recommended actions, even as they were under discussion.
The interim report has really promoted a discussion about details. What are the issues here? You know, more detail of how will we use education? How will we assess different areas and what their needs are for different designs of facilities. So the interim report is reinforcing these general concepts, but it's really refining and pointing the direction that we need to go to come up with really appropriate, effective solutions and uses of the tools we're talking about.
Adirondack Wild Friends of the Forest Preserve managing partner David Gibson says the report reinforces much of what the DEC is already doing, but not much more.
It sort of moves the chairs around the deck, in our opinion, and doesn't really address the overarching problem of overuse, which really has to marry both the front country and the back country of the High Peaks Wilderness. In the interim report, there's practically no mention of the Unit Management Plan, which took over 30 years to produce, and which really addresses a lot of the front country and back country issues that we're taking a swing at again now. And I think the task force should be advised to take a fresh look at the Unit Management Plan and always keep that plan uppermost in mind.
Protect the Adirondacks Executive Director Peter Bauer says the report is a short-term plan to deal with the summer and the extraordinary COVID outbreak.
We were pleased that they put out an interim report. Things have changed dramatically in New York since the time this group was formed to the time it put out its interim report. The state's financial position has changed dramatically, and the public use of the Forest Preserve and all of the protocols around COVID-19 public safety have changed the way in which the public will use the high peaks.
Bauer adds that Protect submitted a 25-page letter to the advisory group with numerous recommendations that he hopes the group includes in a longer-term plan.
Long-term solutions that we're looking for include a High Peaks Visitor Center, a National Park-style visitor center somewhere in the Keene Valley area. We have to get serious about public education. Like, how is it that we can get information to people about how to use the High Peaks, about how to plan their trip to the High Peaks, about how to protect the resource in the High Peaks before they even show up? And then we also need to build the necessary infrastructure so that we can accommodate safely public use in the High Peaks, and we need to have science and good data driving those decisions.
A link to the report is at WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask program number 2026. Or just listen or podcast on the web at WAMC.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Giustino.